Hello, the United States. This is Royal Arch Gunnison reporting to you from the Philippine Islands. Since we are now into our second week of the invasion of the Philippines, it is possible to see more clearly what has taken place and what is already going on that will make our continuous push northward quicker and perhaps easier. I don't mean that the fighting is going to be any easier. No, indeed. Everyone expects a rough time each jump we make closer to the Imperial Palace in Tokyo. But each time we jump, we also are packing a heavier wallop for Hirohito. This week, I have been talking with some of the highest Army and Navy officers directing this Philippines campaign. While I can't quote them directly, I have come away with certain definite impressions. But before I pass them along to you, I want to tell you a bit about the correspondent's own minor problems that face us daily right here in Leyte. In the first place, when you are running for the nearest foxhole several times a day to dodge a Jap bombing or strafing run, your thoughts are not exactly dwelling on the broader aspects of the campaign. The Japs hit us all along the coast from Tacloban down to Dulag, usually three times during the night and several times during the day. The other night, we had a quick surprise raid by three Jap dive bombers. I didn't even hear them come in. It was just at sunset, and after we'd finished our dinner at the war correspondent's mess tent, we were talking outside. Suddenly, these three nips were overhead and streaking for the airstrip. Just as quickly, the AK-AK guns began tossing a sky full of red tracers at them. One of the Japs was hit immediately by the quick trigger work on the part of some GI gun crew. The other two hugged the palm tree tops. In less than a few seconds, the scream of four P-38s showed the direction of their attack, but they had to veer off temporarily because of our own heavy AK-AK. But that didn't stop this P-38 gang. They stayed on the tail of those two nip hit-and-run boys, and just over the town of Palo, not far from where we were, the Americans caught one of the nips, and he made the prettiest black and gold ball of burnished Japanese aircraft tumbling end over end in the sunset that I've ever seen. Two out of three Japs who attack us have been getting hit, and the Japs can't stand that pace. No country can stand to lose 3,000 planes in a little over 1 month. Apart from the Jap airplane losses to Admiral Halsey's and Admiral Mitcher's carrier forces north of the central Philippines in the past 10 days, the smaller CVEs of Admiral Kincaid's 7th Fleet and the recently arrived land-based planes of the Far East Air Force have accounted for over 350 Japanese planes, and these have been in direct attacks on us right here in this limited area. And right here is a good place to say something about these land-based, red-nosed P-38 fighter planes. The twin-tailed P-38 unit that came to our assistance is a red-hot outfit. They have about 500 Jap planes to their credit. What's more, this is Major Dick Bong's outfit. While I haven't seen any scores for European aces in the past weeks, I believe that Dick Bong now holds the American record of 33 planes shot down in the air. The air support received by General MacArthur here has been superb. General MacArthur had to take the long chance of a Bab typhoon breaking in on the invasion and preventing the quick rebuilding of the few Jap airfields in this region. We have been extremely fortunate in the weather. The weather and the Jap Navy with its planes were about the only things that could have stopped us. A typhoon raced ahead of us 4 days before we landed, but actually hampered the Japanese defenses. And when the Jap Southern Fleet came up from Singapore and Borneo to put the squeeze on us, we were able to turn the tables on them. And while we're talking about that naval battle, there's one thing that needs to be pointed out from this end, at least. There seems to be considerable competition between task and fleet forces, not to admit ground forces, as to who actually was solely responsible for the defeat of that Jap naval force. Was it Halsey, or was it Kincaid right here in Leyte Gulf? From talking with some of the men who were in the battle, even a couple of captured Japanese officers, and from studying the Jap strategy and American defense, it is obvious that there's only one answer as to who twisted the tail of the Jap dragon. It was the joint action of Halsey and Kincaid. Certainly, without Halsey's holding the regular Imperial Jap fleet off with one hand to the north and helping Admiral Kincaid with a few carriers to the south, it is unlikely Admiral Kincaid would have fared so well. On the other hand, without Admiral Kincaid, Admiral Halsey was open to attack by the Jap Southern Force as well as the Northern Imperial Fleet. It was the combined United States Navy that whacked the Japs in what Admiral King has called probably the largest naval engagement the world has ever experienced. Certainly from my vantage point here in Leyte Gulf, with most of the battle roaring and flashing some 30 to 65 miles away, frankly, I thought all hell had broken loose. Thus it is that my conversations with high-ranking officers here on Leyte make it appear that we have overcome our first two major obstacles. First was the fact that the Japs had an opportunity to counterattack after the invasion with numerically superior land-based planes. They did not do it. Secondly, we got past the expected Japanese naval attack with considerably more success than it appeared we would from where I was watching the battle. Now the immediate work ahead is getting planes, supplies, and more men and fighting equipment at hand to keep on driving northward. And if Premier General Koiso could see the flow of ships constantly moving into the harbor from I don't know where, he'd begin to pack his kimono and head for the hinterland of Manchuria. A factor that is giving us great assistance in this preparation for the next jumps is the guerrilla army. By this time, you've heard much about the way the guerrillas have been operating. The aid they have given us and are giving us is of tremendous assistance. But the problem right now, especially here in Leyte, is that every Filipino wants to become a guerrilla. I was in the small office of the guerrilla leader Colonel Kang Leon yesterday, talking with him, when about 30 bushy-haired, dusty-covered Filipinos straggled in and squatted on the floor. The leader of the group wore a bandolier of bullets. He carried a long Japanese rifle and wore a pair of hobnailed Jap shoes taken off some Jap soldier. Then I began to notice the others. Some had burlap bag pants. Their ages ran from about 12 to 40 or 50. All of them had tattered clothes, and most of it was Japanese. They carried wicked-looking curved knives in wooden sheaths, and these knives looked well used. Kang Leon asked them what they wanted. The leader spoke haltingly in the presence of the great patriot. "We are volunteer guards, sir," he said. "We bring you these Japanese bullets and these Japanese guns. We have killed many Japanese these past 5 days. Now we come from our barrio to join you. We wish to become the regular guerrilla force and go back to the hills and fight." Kang Leon turned to me. "How do you like that?" he asked. "How can I permit these untrained people to go back into the hills? And look at those small boys. They must be in school, not fighting the Japanese." Then he spoke in the Visayan dialect, quietly, patiently, rapidly. Tears of emotion came to the eyes of the volunteer leader, a frail little man who looked like the Filipino counterpart of Mr. Meek. "But, sir," he pleaded, and pointed around the group, "everyone here has a score to settle. You cannot deny us our only chance. You cannot stop us if we privately go back to avenge the wrongs done us." And he had the guerrilla leader there. Kang Leon shrugged his shoulders. The motley crowd put their Japanese caps and straw hats back on their mops of black hair and trudged down the dusty street past hundreds of jeeps, trucks, ducks, and command cars. They looked neither right nor left. There was no doubt where they were going. But to understand the guerrilla movement here, one must note the difference between types and kinds of guerrillas. There are the regular U.S. Army guerrillas already inducted into the American Filipino Armed Forces. Then there are the volunteers like the group in Kang Leon's office. But there is another and larger element that, at the moment, is slowly being curbed. These are Filipinos who have gone from barrio to village, pillaging and stealing, even murdering, in the name of the guerrillas. Actually, they are bandits who have been no goods most of their lives, living by their wits. This element is small but potent at this stage in the liberation, and it is being dealt with severely by President Osmeña's new Justice Department. And this brings me to another point. That is the question I know everyone has been concerned about. Whether or not President Osmeña and his Washington, D.C. cabinet would be accepted as the legal government back here by the Filipino population itself. As Vice President and the man who took over from the late Manuel Quezon, President Osmeña still has one full year to run out his term of office. What has happened is encouraging. He has already received word via the bamboo telegraph that he is welcome home as the statesman to lead the Filipino people into the creation of their new liberated nation, and that makes everyone breathe easier. And as a final item, to prove that everything's under control in Leyte, we have welcomed a batch of United States Army nurses here. Among them is Captain Catherine Acorn, who was evacuated from Bataan and Corregidor. And as she said today, she and I have one reason in common for getting back. She has 66 nurses with whom she worked in Bataan and Corregidor, who are now prisoners in Santo Tomas concentration camp at Manila. She wants to rejoin them and then get them home as quickly as possible. For my part, I have a few hundred friends and several thousand former Jap prisoner colleagues I want to find, and when I do, I promise I'll get their names and how they are on the air as fast as I can. I know how their friends and families at home are waiting to hear about them. This is Royal Arch Gunnison reporting to you again from the Philippine Islands. You'll hear from me often now, all the way back to Manila. I now return you to Mutual in the United States.